Time now for hour number two of our big two-hour weekend get-together here on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here's the host of the show, Carol Marx, in conversation now with Dennis Krebs. He spent 7 years as a tactical medic and a combined 40 years in the fire and rescue service. He's going to tell Carol about his new book titled Medic Up, Where Criminals, SWAT Teams, and Medicine Intersect, published by CreateSpace Independent Publishing.
Now, Dennis, you've worked for 30 years in the fire service. What made you decide to become a tactical medic? And just what is a tactical medic, and what does he do?
It started back in about 1982 when I came very close to being shot in the face while on a medic call for a man slumped over the steering wheel of his car. And that evolved into providing training for firefighters and paramedics and how to keep from being shot and stabbed. And through that, in about the early 1990s, it was a new evolution of paramedics being assigned to special operations teams, to SWAT teams. And the Department of Defense had just started a program in teaching medics to operate with teams. And they asked me to come on board and start teaching what I had been doing. And that evolved into me actually being linked up with some teams, both federally and locally. And the mechanism, the idea, is that you provide care under fire a lot of times to not only the members of the team, but to the innocent civilians and even the suspects themselves once they are taken into custody.
Wow. Quite a job and so needed. Now, in your thriller, your main character, Danny Weaver, has just taken the grueling 3-week course to become a tactical medic. Now, how difficult is that course? I mean, I read a little bit about it in your book, and I said, oh, that's hard.
Yeah, most of the SWAT schools throughout the nation are very intense. Above and beyond what a normal police officer goes through. And depending upon the jurisdiction, a lot of the medics have to go through that same training that a regular SWAT team officer goes through, just so that they get the idea of what the team will be up against and be able to understand their tactics. And it's not only physically stressful, but mentally as well, because you're being faced with a lot of things that are out of the ordinary. Most people, when they hear gunshots, they're heading the other way. And these folks have to step up to the plate and be able to deal with the situation that they're faced with. So it becomes rather intense. And Danny Weaver not only has to face the challenges of the school, but the challenges of a team leader that doesn't want him there, that believes that a medic on the team is not necessary. So he has to face that challenge as well.
And that's so difficult when you have a boss over you that is not being supportive. Now, Danny also, after he gets his training, he enrolls in another school for paramedics and EMTs, and that's the one to become a tactical medical service provider. Is that training a lot tougher than the SWAT team and EMT training he went through? Because that in itself I thought was very hard.
It's a different type of challenge because you're now learning skills that probably a little bit beyond what the normal paramedic would get. It's not as physically demanding as the SWAT school, but mentally challenging in that you have to learn to operate without much in the way of medical direction because you can't get on a phone or a radio and call your medical control and talk to them if you have a question. You don't have much in the way of gear that you carry. Everything you carry is on your body armor or in a small pack on your back. You can't carry an oxygen bottle. You can't carry a cardioscope or a suction unit. So you have a limited amount of equipment. You have a lot of things that you can be faced with, from penetrating trauma like gunshot wounds, all the way to simple things that the team may be involved with, one of the team members taking a rifle butt in the tooth as they're getting out of a van, and you might have to take care of a dental injury. things that are really you don't think about a lot of times in normal medicine.
And, you know, I was really, you know, the book made me think about, you know, how brave and how you really have to learn everything about your medical equipment, because sometimes you can't turn on a light to find anything because that might alert a suspect to where you are. Very hard.
Exactly. And there have been instances in combat where medics have been killed because just the small light on the end of a laryngoscope, which is only a couple of watts, it's even smaller than the about the size of the head of a pencil, the light that you use on a laryngoscope, and even that has gotten some people shot and killed in combat. So,
wow.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of, everything has to be done by feel in the dark.
You know, now I also understand that medical personnel who are part of the tactical medical services use some things that I really hadn't heard of that are great. And I guess one of them came from the war in Somalia, and it is a powdered substance that helps red blood cells clot. Pretty
yes.
Good.
Hemostatic agents, and that's a great question. They've developed those, and some of the early models had some issues with what was called an exothermic reaction. It heated up and caused some burns surrounding the injury, but the newer versions are very well accommodating and save quite a few lives.
And I also was surprised to learn about some new medications that the military has been having great success with. Fentanyl, it's a narcotic, 100 times more potent than morphine for controlling the pain, and the way it's administered, I thought that was fascinating. Is that used out on the field, and is that ever used in, you know, in a normal situation in a hospital?
Yes. The fentanyl was used in the war theaters rather extensively for pain management, and even now here in Maryland, fentanyl is used on medic units prior to sort of as a replacement for morphine. So it's being adopted by field units even beyond the use for tactical medics. It's being used for in the field for pain management with, let's say, heart attacks.
Now, isn't what makes Medic Up such a page-turner really the fact that it's Danny's first involvement with the SWAT team, and the man they're trying to arrest is a homicidal maniac. He's subject to extreme mood swings. He senselessly killed a bunch of innocent people. He's on the run with two female hostages. So I would think that Danny had to be just a bit nervous. And, you know, what was it like writing about how you feel when you're presented with such, you know, really unnerving situations?
It actually didn't take much in the way of imagination, because the book is a takeoff from an actual incident that I was involved in about 12 years ago now. It occurred in a different portion of town. It lasted for an excess of 10 days, and as we moved in on the suspect, who had barricaded himself in a house, he began shooting down the street at us as we started up the street. So as I wrote the book, I was actually probably reliving the incident that I had been involved in.
And I imagine it's especially stressful when you have a hostage situation. You know, when it goes on for a number of hours, and the longer it goes, the more difficult it must be.
Yes, because you have the sense to be able to let your guard down at times, because you get tired, and you know that you can't. And that's where all of that training comes into play in a basic SWAT school, so that you can withstand the tension and you can stay up for the rest of the incident. And even in the basic tactical medicine training, some of the things that I had learned dealt with extended operations that would go on for days. And not knowing any better in my younger years, I thought, well, when would that ever happen in a big metro area like Baltimore? You would think something like that at Waco, Texas, or out Ruby Ridge, places like that. But that actually did occur, and I had to pull on that training that I had received and deal with our team members in their extended operation of what food they needed to take in instead of just having a couple of hot dogs and some donuts as their normal meal, because we didn't leave for days. We were on station for days in a house about two doors up from where the hostage incident was occurring. So for days we sat and I had to ensure that they were taking in proper hydration, that the food intake was appropriate to keep them up and motivated and not bring them down physiologically.
Well, Dennis, as you just pointed out, a dangerous situation can happen anywhere. So can you just give us one or two tactical measures that can be taken, you know, by civilians who get caught up innocently that might protect them from getting hurt?
One of the things that a lot of people ask about is just that. It's a great question that, especially in the age recently where it seems to be a number of active shooter situations at malls and at schools. One of the things that people can do is, as they go into the mall this week, stop for a second and just think about what you would do if you heard gunfire in that mall. That exit sign that you see above the door, back door of a store leads you outside. One of the best things that you can do is to get out of the building. And if you find that you can't, barricade yourself in a back room. Put something against the door to barricade the door. And one of the biggest things, turn your cell phone down. Get the volume down so that if it does ring as the shooter is walking by, they don't hear you. That is a giveaway that would put the shooter onto his next target.
Dennis Krebs, author of Medic Up, Where Criminals, SWAT Teams, and Medicine Intersect, published by CreateSpace Independent Publishing, in conversation with Carol Marks. Carol returns with more Touch of Gray in just a moment.
A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where hostingforcheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself, because hostingforcheap.com isn't just about domain names. It's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online, from building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase. Hostingforcheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Here again is Carol Marks in conversation now with M.L. Rowland. She was a search and rescue worker for over a decade, and she's going to tell Carol about her new thriller, Zero Degree Murder, a search and rescue mystery, published by Berkeley.
And you've also said that one of the qualifications that you have to write your novel, which really has as a main character the only woman on a search and rescue team, and her name is Gracie Kincaid, and she is part of the team looking for four hikers missing in the wilderness of Southern California. And you said that the fact that you were a woman made you feel what it was like for this other woman to be on the team. And in real life, when you've been on search and rescue teams, have you found any gender-specific obstacles where women might have had a harder time or got teased or whatever?
In my experience, absolutely not. There were some allowances, but very, very few for the difference in physical ability. But such as if there were, we had to pass a physical fitness test or something, I didn't have to do those push-ups that I hate. You know, I got to do girl push-ups or whatever. But for the absolute most part, there was no difference in the requirements, the physical requirements, the knowledge, the experience, all of that was non-gender specific. In other words, I felt that I had to pull my weight on the team, and I couldn't expect any less or more from my team members, and I didn't expect them to treat me any differently than any of the other guys because our lives depended on it. I had to be able to depend on them for my life, and they had to depend on me for their lives.
Now, we are in the winter season, and we're having an extreme winter with lots of snow and blizzards off and on in some places. And your character finds herself in a blizzard. Do you have any important survival tips for winter outdoor adventurers? Because people do go out at this time of year, and they can get caught in an unexpected storm.
You're absolutely right. And actually, one of the main things that you have to remember is to be not take it for granted that it could happen to you, because it can happen to you. And so one of the most important things to be prepared is when you go out, is to be prepared when you go out as if something could happen. In other words, whether you're going for a hike, whether you're just going for a walk around the block, or whether you're driving in your car, always let someone know when you are leaving and where you're going and when you should be coming back. Always bring water with you, extra layers. If you're going out in your car, don't rely solely on the navigation system of your car, because that can fail or that information can be wrong. So there's lots of things that you can do in advance to be prepared if you get caught out, if you get lost, or if your car breaks down, if you're stranded in the snow. You want to be prepared in advance.
Absolutely. Now, getting back to your murder mystery thriller, Zero Degree Murder, it has one of the most devilish, despicable murderers that I've ever encountered in a mystery. So that really sets
good.
Is that true? It sets the tension level way up right at the beginning. And our heroine, Gracie, really, she's got two choices. And I love that she has these two choices because they're both so difficult. And the choices are to try to walk out of the camp that she's in where death was a possibility, she walked out of it and tried to get back to a safer place, or she could stay where she was and death would be a certainty. So those are two of the worst choices I've ever read about. Not good.
Right. Yes. Well, I tried to make it as tension-filled as possible. One of the things that I'm going to draw it back to what people can do, one of the most important things when you are lost or you're stranded is to stay where you are, because it's very difficult for search teams to find a moving target. And that actually is one of the things that Gracie takes into consideration when she's deciding what to do, is that if she leaves where she is, then when rescue teams come back looking for her, she won't be where they think she is. And that's a huge problem for her to decide what to do, whether to stay or whether to leave.
Now, turning to your own search and rescue missions in real life, what's the most challenging one that you've been on, and why was it so challenging for you?
Well, there are different types of challenges. There are physical challenges, there are mental challenges, and there are emotional challenges. So the physical challenges would be if you're not wandering around, obviously, because we're searchers, but if you're walking through heavy fog. I remember we were in such heavy fog that my glasses kept fogging up, and I had to keep taking them off and wiping them off so that I could see. Or if you're in dense smoke, because we were evacuating our community because of forest fires, and we couldn't see even where we were driving, and it was very difficult to breathe. So there are circumstances where it's very physically challenging. There are emotionally challenging ones where you've been searching for days and your search does not have a successful outcome. That's very emotionally challenging. So
I would
there's just different. Yes, ma'am.
No, I would think that would be the most difficult thing that you would have to encounter would be, you know, where you don't find the person that you're looking for. Very tough.
Yes, that is very challenging. Emotionally, searchers do sometimes experience post-traumatic stress, but those are very few. Most of the time we have successful outcomes. Either we find the people, the missing person, or they're found by another team, or they actually end up walking out on their own. And in some, what we like to think are humorous situations, they've been in town drinking in a bar while we've been out searching for them. So, I mean, the outcome is positive because the person is safe. So, but there are lots of different kinds of challenges. And in answer to your question, there's not one that sticks out in my mind because they're so varied. And there were so many different stories and different events because, as I said, I was very active and our team was very active. We got called out a lot.
Now, are most of the members of the search and rescue teams volunteers?
On our specific team, yes. I'm going to hazard a guess and say a lot, if not most, teams are volunteered. They're staffed by volunteers. We operated under the auspices of the Sheriff's Department, but we had a very small population from which to draw, so it was very difficult to keep our team numbers up. And so I say that in hopes that that search and rescue will become more forward in people's minds when they think, "Well, boy, I want to spend my time volunteering. What can I do?" Search and rescue teams always need people and they always need help. And I want to go out of my way to say you don't always go into the field. They need people that stay back in the command post. They need people to help them stay organized. They need people to help them keep their vehicles in great working order. So there's lots of ways that you can help.
M.L. Rowland, in conversation with Carol Marks. The book is titled Zero Degree Murder, a Search and Rescue Mystery, published by Berkeley. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. You're listening to A Touch of Gray. The program continues with Richard Neer, and that's next.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're going to be joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent Richard Neer, who just moments from now will be talking with Mark Mincola, Ph.D. He designed the Whole Health Healing System that is designed to teach people that food is the best medicine and helps them understand what our bodies want and need through a series of at-home tests. He's going to talk to Richard about his new book titled Whole Health, A Holistic Approach to Healing for the 21st Century, published by Toucher Penguin. That should be interesting. Richard, we look forward to that conversation. A couple of things to discuss with you in terms of milestones of popular culture and our generation, which, of course, this is a generational program. The passing of Shirley Temple this past week is certainly a historic and noteworthy event. And I don't know. I bet you that there isn't one person listening to this broadcast who has not heard of Shirley Temple.
When I was a kid, my parents would watch Shirley Temple movies, and we'd watch it on our little 10-inch Magnavox black and white TV. And, you know, I guess it was cute. And then as you get older, you know, you start to go, oh, Shirley Temple, and you get into the Beatles and you get into your rock and roll stuff. But then if you ever, as an adult, look back And think of this kid who was 4, 5, 6 years old, memorizing all this dialogue, first of all, acting, singing and dancing with, like, Bill Bojangles and keeping up with him step for step. It was amazing how good she was.
She was, like, from something from another dimension. She had the most amazing screen presence. She was able, of course, you know, she might have been a very bright girl. She had to be to do what you're saying, as you point out. She memorized all that stuff. She knew how to communicate. But she had such an amazing way of delivering lines that were written for her that you actually believed she was smarter than the adults that she was talking to in terms of the roles. She had this credibility and a voice. There was just something about her.
They say she could cry on demand. You know, when there was a scene where she had to tear up, they'd say, okay, you got to cry here. And tears would flow. I mean, that's like a supernatural skill for a kid or for anybody to be able to do.
There's a couple of things about her. And you mentioned that she was a good actress if she can cry on demand. One is there was no scandal attached to her. She got older. And she gracefully became a teenager. She wasn't as cute as a teen as she was when she was a preteen and a tyke. And then she went on to become a very formidable woman in the world and have an adult career that was quite separate from the glitzy showbiz thing. So
she became a diplomat.
Yeah, you know, a very, very distinguished person. Now, that's unusual. But what she also was that a lot of people don't realize, because, you know, today we look back at it and we weren't there. She was an upper for the national mood during the Depression, but she was, in her time, the biggest movie star in the world. A kid. A kid was the biggest movie star in the world. Movie after movie after movie, a giant box office attraction. Could you imagine something like that today?
No, I really can't. I mean, now we've got Honey Boo Boo. I mean, we have kids who are dumb. Or do kid type things. And Shirley Temple was doing adult type things, you know. I mean, she was involved in plots. She was involved in very sophisticated comedy compared to what we see and what passes for comedy with kids now.
Yeah. There's no question. Shirley Temple and Shirley Temple Black is a great woman of our time. And somebody that I salute her, and so do you, and Touch of Grey. Certainly, in our little way, memorializing the important part she played generationally, not just for our generation, seeing her in the old black and white movies that were made before we were born, but just the modern era of the 20th into the 21st century, a great, great woman. All right, we're going to hear the conversation about a holistic approach to healing, and then Richard and I are going to come back. And Richard, you brought up a reference that I think we also should discuss, and that is the Beatles' 50th anniversary. Can you believe that? A half a century past the British invasion. All that and more coming your way when A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again, as promised, is Richard Neer in conversation with Mark Mincola, Ph.D. He designed the Whole Health Healing System that teaches people what food is best medicine and helps them to understand what our bodies want and need through a series of at-home tests. He's going to talk to Richard about his new book titled Whole Health, A Holistic Approach to Healing for the 21st Century, published by Tarcher Penguin.
Doctor, thank you so much for joining us. Now, as
you're
undoubtedly aware, there are a lot of diet books, self-help books, health books generally this time of year. I don't know whether it has to coincide with New Year's resolutions or what. But tell us what is different about your book and what makes it stand out from the others.
Well, first of all, it's really a book that suggests that we're not all just going to succeed by dealing with ourselves holistically at a cellular level. We can't just eat better and exercise and get the job done. That we have to kind of be a little bit more tuned into our energy and for people to understand energy a little bit more in the spirit of Chinese medicine. You know, the Chinese, of course, have spent centuries kind of perfecting this awareness that we have acupuncture zones and meridian zones and energy fields. And we in the West have, of course, that has eluded us. We work more at a biochemical level, at a mechanistic sort of chemistry level, and that is simply inadequate for the understanding of the phenomena of energy. So I say it's really important for us to kind of take a little bit of a primer in the direction of Chinese medicine to understand that we are energy, and that when we consider taking care of ourselves holistically, we need to take that into consideration as well. So this book sort of westernizes that approach, contemporizes it, simplifies it, and really teaches the reader how to kind of better work with it as a property that can actually help them to feel better.
If this approach has been successful in China, why has the West been so slow to adapt some of these principles?
I think, you know, the old adage, east is west is and west is west, I think it pertains here. I just think, you know, that things are starting to come together. We're starting to bridge some of those gaps now of understanding, and I think that it's been something that for years we've had a hard time wrapping our heads around. We've had a difficult time actually monetizing it, I guess, probably to some extent, because you're talking about cellular medicine and mechanistic chemistry. These are tangible factors that you can monetize. You can actually work with, you know, things that analyze chemistry like blood and cells and all this business. But in terms of Chinese medicine, I think that it's been something that we've had a hard time with because you can't see it, you can't touch it, you can't feel it, you can't wrap the senses around it. And I think, again, they've had great ways for tapping into these things and really understanding them at deeper levels that I think we can learn from. That's really what Whole Health tries to do, is teach the reader how to kind of use some of these principles and actually learn some of the exercises and some of these protocols in their own day-to-day life at home.
Now, in your book, you suggest that there are five spices that you can use that can help you beat cancer. Explain that, because that obviously, with so many people fighting cancer or knowing people that are fighting cancer, tell us about these spices and what they do.
Well, you know, there are many different studies these days that talk, in fact, the the most recent study that I read actually was a remarkable study that indicated that there's tremendous antioxidant properties in spices. In fact, the USDA did a study in 2006 that actually bears that out, and it suggests that of all the foods that have a high concentration of antioxidants to help us prevent cancer and heart disease, they listed the top 10 foods and antioxidants that are immune enhancing. Number one was actually red kidney beans. Number two was wild blueberries. The eight of the top 10 foods that the USDA found as antioxidant-rich foods were beans and berries. Now, that's not so surprising. What they did, though, is they gave them actually a point value to try to give people a concept as to just how strong these foods are as disease-preventing agents. And they have a point factor that's kind of a relative score of 15,000 points. The highest foods that are antioxidant-rich are 15,000 points. Then they looked at spices. One quarter of a teaspoon of spices is 25 to 45 times higher than the highest foods per quarter teaspoon. So the USDA found, in fact, that as many of these studies have, that spices are actually higher in antioxidants than the highest foods are.
What spices in particular?
Clove was the very highest of all. Clove score for the USDA had like 270,000 points. Again, the highest food per serving was 15,000. A quarter teaspoon of clove was 270,000. So, I mean, all the spices you can imagine. I mean, like cinnamon was listed, turmeric was listed, even oregano and parsley. So all your basic common spices are listed as pretty high concentrations with high concentrations of antioxidants. The highest were clove, but ginger was there. All your common spices are listed. But, you know, the idea is that Americans tend not to use spices. I always suggest that we use organic spice because they're not compromised with a lot of pesticides.
Now, you also talk about acupressure. And is that something where you need to go to a particular therapist, or are these things that you can do with yourself or a partner?
I just did a Dr. Oz segment about 12 days ago. It's going to air on the 30th of January. And one of the things that he was intrigued with and he asked me to do is to come on and actually do some muscle testing while I was putting pressure on pressure points just to show what these pressure points are all about. So there are three pressure points in the hand that actually we demonstrated. One is for insomnia, one is for anxiety, and one is for stress. And I just showed the audience where these three points were. It's going to be up on their website and all that business. And we're going to, again, the segment will air on the 30th of January. But, yeah, indeed, there's no question about the fact that these pressure points are very powerful points. Part of what we want people to understand, again, is that the Chinese system of medicine is energy-based. It's not just cellular-based. But there's some really amazing applications that have been developed for thousands of years for simple things like headaches and insomnia and stress and whatnot, that can be utilized by just putting pressure in these points over a period of time and working with these points and stimulating the energy zone and these meridians, if you will. So absolutely, there's no question about the fact that these points have been exposed and developed and worked with for thousands of years. I think we have a great deal to glean from them as health advocates in our lives.
Well, I know you can't address them all individually in the short time that we have, but you say that memory can actually be improved by acupressure. Tell us a little bit about that and where these points might be to improve one's memory, because that's something we all struggle with after a certain age.
Yeah, there's a point called gallbladder 13. It's actually right up on the forehead. It's kind of like if you take your thumb rather and your pinky and you go up over your eyebrows about an inch to an inch and a quarter over your eyebrows, corner to corner, front and left forehead corners, and you put pressure on those points and you put deep pressure on those and just hold it. Those are points that actually can help you retain better, can help you stimulate different energy fields in your body that actually help you attain memory more and more efficiently. And so if you're trying to remember where those car keys are, you can put a little pressure on the corners of your forehead, and hopefully you'll find those car keys a little more quickly.
Now, what do you have a reason for why this is? Is it blood flow to the brain? What are your thoughts on why this works?
Well, again, what it does is we're talking about moving energy. When you go to acupressure, acupuncture, you're stimulating certain areas. Like we just mentioned, the gallbladder. The gallbladder meridians are all in the brain. So the gallbladder 13 point that we just talked about a moment ago is representative of stimulating energy within the brain through the gallbladder meridian. Meridians are referring to kind of like a highway system of energy in the body. So they're like long, striated nerve pathways. And gallbladder 13 is an easy access nerve pathway to cognitive function, cognitive recall, brain function, memory, etc. So, Yes, indeed, that's exactly correct, that you're stimulating the energy around the brain as the gallbladder meridian actually is all predominantly located within the brain.
That's Mark Minkola, Ph.D., in conversation with our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. His book is titled Whole Health, A Holistic Approach to Healing for the 21st Century, published by Tartra Penguin. For more information, go to the website maxhealing.com. That's maxhealing.com. Richard Neer returns with some final words. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Grey continues in just a moment.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marx offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marx is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we return to a conversation with Richard Neer as we come to the final segment of this program, and mentioned earlier that we would talk about the Beatles. 50 years. That means that most of the people listening, all the people listening to this program, not most, all the people listening to this program have lived in a world where there were the Beatles, where they either were before or during their life, but this is an extraordinary thing that when those Fab Four popped up on the scene back in the early 60s with She Loves You and I Want to Hold Your Hand, that, you know, we used to talk about how long will it last. Half a century later, they're still the biggest deal that ever was. Amazing.
It is amazing. And you look at today's rockers, today's musicians, and you say, how many of them 50 years from now will be anything but a faint memory? Oh, yeah, whatever happened to them when I grew up? I remember them, sort of.
Mm. Mm.
And the amazing thing was, I don't know if you saw the CBS tribute to the Beatles, which was a little disconcerting because they actually did it a couple of weeks ago, the day after they did the Grammy Awards.
Mm-hmm.
So they had all the musicians and all the people who had attended the Grammys were there. So most of it was on tape. And a lot of the bands that did tributes to the Beatles and sang their songs weren't even alive back in 1970 when the Beatles broke up.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm saying it's amazing. They were the biggest pop culture phenomenon of our lifetime, whether or not you measure it quantitatively or qualitatively, in my opinion. There always are these people come along, you know, so-and-so sold more records than the Beatles. More concert tickets were sold than the Beatles. They always use the Beatles. This was Elvis as the guide. And Elvis, of course, was the phenomenon that happened 10 years before the Beatles and was no slouch himself. He's still out there. But I think the Beatles were bigger than Elvis Presley, more impact than Elvis Presley, and at this point are still not even really dated, although some millennials may argue with me about that. The Beatles have had an extraordinary impact and lasting quality, and frankly, I still find it hard to explain why. It's really hard to pinpoint what it was about the Beatles.
Well, they were different. I mean, when you look at them, pictures of them now, they look like they're dressed in suits and they have skinny ties and they have moderate length hair. But if you remember back in 63, 64, we had crew cuts. We dressed very, very differently. You know, we wore sport jackets, plaid. We had madras shirts, things like that. You know, the Beach Boys were more what American kids looked like at the time. And I remember my dear uncle, who loved us kids, when we started to grow our hair because of the Beatles, he turned his back and disowned us practically, never spoke to us again. There was such a cultural change.
You could always tell the cool adults from the uncool ones. The hip adults very quickly said, these Beatles are good. The uncool adults shunned them and found everything wrong with them. But I'll tell you quite simply, with my life, the Beatles took me and turned me in 1 week from being a nerd to being one of the hippest kids in the school. When the Beatles culture hit, my culture hit. Before that, I was a guy with a big nose, big ears, short hair, funny looking. 1 month later, I had long hair, hip, totally into it, and I never looked back.
You know, it's funny. I had a similar experience in terms of the Beatles because I was in a band. After the Beatles came out, I was in a band called the Holy Cross Beatles, named after the school where we went.
Oh my.
And I wanted to be Paul McCartney in the worst way.
Yeah.
And I wanted to learn the bass, and I wanted to sing. And it was the first time I was ever on stage in front of an audience, and therefore my performing career started pretty directly because of the Beatles.
Well, your performing career on this show is ending now because we're out of time. So thank you, Beverly. Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Steve. And thank you, Kevin. The show's over. Michael Harrison inviting you to join us for A Touch of Grey next weekend right here.